On today's episode of Bill and Frank's Guilt-Free Pleasures, I try desperately to understand what time signatures mean and how they work.
And we talk corporate rock, prog rock, and songs unsung.
So if you ever find yourself in 1982, throw on some Bill and Frank's Guilt-Free Pleasures and get ready for Asia's The Heat of the Moment.
All right, Bill, I'm going to pose this question to you and also to 14-time guest Dave Kitchen. Have you ever got yourself really riled up in an argument or discussion or confrontation and you just sort of blurted something out in the heat of the moment that you've regretted?
Yeah, I think so. Not as like cinematic in terms of it. I think I blurted it out before I got overheated. Like I fired off the gunshot too early.
So it basically hit yourself in the foot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You weren't shooting off your mouth, you were just shooting off your toe.
Yes, Frank, that's correct. You don't want to know what it is. I'm not telling you what it is, because I think I blocked it from my memory.
Are you getting a little hot right now?
I am.
You're going to regret saying something to me?
You know what I think about you, Frank?
Well, let's hear it.
I think Dave Kitchen should jump in before I say something I regret.
I've learned a lesson in life that the zinger that you think is a zinger is not worth it in the moment.
Oh, yeah, absolutely not. And that is a lesson that I apparently have refused to learn over the course of my 46 years on this planet. I continually say things when I really should remain silent.
The verbal abuse I was taking before this episode started was pretty severe.
You know, Dave, things that are said off mic really should not be brought up on mic. So let's think about that before maybe you come back for number 15, okay?
So Frank, I gotta say, like, this might be the most passive aggressive way that you're apologizing to Kitch for those awful things you just said to him.
Well, you should have heard the things I said before you even showed up.
What a start. Hot mic here.
They're mostly about you, but you know.
I was in the fetal position. That's all I have to say.
I mentioned today to Ashley that we were doing a song by Asia. And she immediately brightened up and said, "That's fantastic." And she started to sing, you guessed it, Steely Dan.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. I'm like, no, not that song. No.
What song by Steely Dan?
It was Asia.
Oh, that's a song? I didn't know that was a song by Steely Dan.
Yeah, it's the album, Asia. AJA, though.
Aja.
Yeah. Well, when you were hanging out with me and Ashley's jazz friends, you're like, Aja? I love that Aja album. And they all looked at their toes.
A good sign, though, that the song is in the right universe.
Yeah, absolutely.
That it shares company with Steely Dan.
That's right. Or it draws disdain from Steely Dan fans, as well as like highfalutin Pitchfork fans and punk fans and anyone else. I feel there's a lot of hatred towards
this. There's a common enemy.
That's right. So, and the song, of course, is Heat of the Moment by Asia.
Did I not say that?
I just want to have a place where I can insert the song.
Oh, okay. It was the heat of the moment.
This song got mentioned in that movie, The 40-Year-Old Virgin. Did you rewatch the scene where they made fun of him for having an Asia poster up on his wall?
No.
Okay. I did. I didn't really like the movie that much when I revisited. The camera spends too long on jokes that aren't as funny as they should be. It needs to be about a half an hour shorter.
I feel like we could have used some of that extra time for this song, though. Because the video version and everything that I've seen on like Spotify and stuff, it's like three minutes, nine seconds, which is too short for a song that sounds this good.
For sure. Yeah. So it's the album version is 3:45.
Oh, okay. That's better.
But it's still apparently cut way back, that the producer spent hours and hours getting it down to under 4 minutes. So there's somewhere in this song is an 8-minute song at least. And you know this if you see all the live versions of it, they're at least 7 minutes usually.
Because Asia is a prog rock supergroup.
That's right.
And they can't help themselves. I think they showed a lot of restraint getting it down to just under 4 minutes for this song. But when they're out there in the wild on the stage, like at a concert, they just, yeah, they can't help themselves. They got to noodle around for another like 10 minutes.
The supermodel version of this in the prog rock universe is they don't get out of bed for less than 10 minutes of song.
Yeah.
Good. So we have four members of this band in the end who ended up being there. Frank, do you have in front of you what bands they're coming out of?
Yeah, they come from Emerson, Lake & Palmer.
That's the drummer, Carl Palmer.
Carl Palmer, yeah. There's two members from Yes.
So Steve Howe and Jeff Downs.
Yeah.
Right?
They come from Yes, and Jeff Downs is also from The Buggles.
Right.
And then the lead singer, John Wetton, comes from King Crimson, Uriah Heep, and UK. I've never actually heard of UK, but...
They were another supergroup.
Were they?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He was in several supergroups leading up into this. So they kept trying him out. Like, basically...
Oh, okay.
I mean, they kind of denied in interviews. Like, no, we're organic, man. Like, I don't know. That's not what I'm reading. They're always trying him out with different pairings to see what would work.
Yeah. And I think King Crimson broke up in 74.
Yeah.
So this album comes out in 82. So for 8 years, he's in the wind in the British music scene, just trying this and that.
Just trying to do his thing, yeah.
Did either of you listen to much prog rock when you were teenagers?
I know that you did.
Yes. Okay, it's okay. You can say how you feel.
I did.
Wow. Yeah.
Not a ton, but I have my Rush moments. This is a safe space, right?
It is, yeah. Okay. No one else is listening.
Right.
I don't ridicule at all, ever.
So a little bit of Yes. I actually had a friend who got me into Yes. And then, you know, the Pink Floyd, the 70s Pink Floyd and all that stuff. Everything that punk was a movement against, I was kind of into for a while.
Yeah, so 17-minute songs, like four songs per album kind of a thing.
Yeah. Oh, man, yeah. Well, Yes famously had like a 2-song album, I think, if I recall. Kitch is trying to pretend he doesn't recall.
Yeah.
But I was a Genesis fan.
Yeah.
And to try to legitimize myself as a teenager who was into Genesis was that I tried really hard to get into Peter Gabriel Genesis.
Yeah, the early Genesis.
But the truth, I was all about Invisible Touch.
Yeah.
I was trying to like, oh, no, yeah, supper's ready. It's great. Yep. It's really long. And I'd sit there listening like, oh, my goodness, I could have gone through the whole Invisible Touch album. Instead, I'm here listening to this weirdo myth song. But they're like some of the key things for prog rock are mythological stories. They love going to like whether it's J.R.R. Tolkien or I don't know, Norse mythology or the Bible. Like I know Genesis, they're just all over the place and weird imagery and impenetrable to me.
Yeah, and then really complicated time signatures, and arrangements of music. You know, I always think of 2112 by Rush as like the prototypical prog rock song where it's good, but it's super complicated.
And these are all like well-trained musicians. So most of them are coming from money. At least that's what I'm thinking. Like just reading through these articles on each of them, where they're coming from, at least knowing from where Genesis, where they all come from. And then the members of this band, Asia, a lot of them got their musical chops, at least for singing, in the church. So they're all kind of in Anglican, high Anglican singing choirs. So they're not really coming out of the rough and tumble world that I always imagine Led Zeppelin's coming out of, but at least for punk music and certainly other types of music.
Yeah. The one thing I found a little bit confusing about the band is the band Boston came from Boston. Chicago came from Chicago. Chilliwack came from Chilliwack, BC.
Chilliwack.
I know, right? But there is no one from Asia in a band called Asia.
I don't get it at all. I don't see anything online about why they're called Asia. It feels like they just needed to pick a continent and Europe was already taken.
Oh, yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
And this is why I think it kind of tingled the spidey senses of the music critics. Were like, wait a sec. What type of name is this for a band? Who came up with this?
Yeah.
And it's like before an artificial intelligence program could spit out the name, like a name generator for a band, is like somebody in, you know, music headquarters is like, Asia, there's a name for a band.
Yeah. But it could also be, you know, looking back on it now, it's not maybe not that good, but it's that Orientalism that goes to the like fantasy realm that they
The
album cover is a dragon.
Yeah.
It's very popular in Asian culture.
Right, right.
Chasing a pearl. Which makes it into the lyrics of the song.
Yeah,
I know we'll talk about that later. But like, the cover of this album is as 80s prog rock as you can get.
Yeah, that's true. And, I mean, they're accused of being, like, the ultimate corporate rock band, or the, like, the prototypical corporate rock.
Yeah.
And I have on my notes, look up corporate rock, which I really didn't do. And then we all tried off mic when Frank wasn't attacking us to define corporate rock. What are we thinking, gentlemen, about corporate rock? I feel like we were saying something about it being, at least in my view, that it would be something that is safe in the eyes of a record company exec. That if you put this hard rock band out there, these albums will for sure sell.
Yeah. It's something that's safe. It's produced. And one thing that I read just literally right now is the bands that are called corporate rock, they all had like a marketable logo that went along with the band.
Right, right.
So Asia had that, the way that their name was written on all the albums. Same with Def Leppard with the sort of scratchy, like recognizable logos that went along with it. So it was essentially a branding exercise.
And the music is a bit derivative too, where it's all, we were talking about this earlier, all a bit in the shadow of bands like Led Zeppelin and The Who, where it's just like, imagine those bands, but then with synth. And it's kind of in that shadow a little bit.
Yeah. If you're a fan of King Crimson, yes, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, or any of those other bands, I'm going to start trying to show off here. Rush, Gentle Giant. Gentle Giant. You guys know Gentle Giant?
No, I don't.
Okay, there we go. I got one there. Okay. Shoot, I really should have looked up some more here.
Are you thinking prog rock?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. I can get this. Okay, no, I can't get this. I only listen to Genesis.
Yeah.
I got to be honest. I just didn't like it. I couldn't get it. I liked Roundabout by Yes. I could get that. But then people would play other things. I'm like, I just don't get it.
Owner of a Lonely Heart. You can get behind that one.
Yeah, because that's corporate Yes.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so, I mean, there is the corporate version was the stuff I loved. And so when I listened to the Asia album over the last week, like, oh man, all these songs are good. They're so listenable and so safe. As I was clipping in my seatbelt, driving at 50 kilometers an hour down the street, like, oh, I like this music a lot.
Wearing your helmet as well, right?
That's right. Checking in on Elijah when I was only at stop signs.
Yeah. Yeah.
The band comes together. There's various versions of this and incarnations of it. Is that the word?
I think so. Yeah.
We have two principal songwriters in Asia. We have John Wetton and Jeffrey Downs.
Yes. Another note. Were you guys also thrown off that Emerson Lake isn't actually a place?
No, the comma kind of gave me the clue that it wasn't like Emerson, comma, Lake and Palmer. Sorry.
But there is an Emerson Lake.
Is there?
Yeah.
With a comma or not?
No, it's where bands go to swim.
Is that a joke?
I think it
That's might be. Terrible.
Yeah, I know.
That's a really bad joke.
I haven't said anything in a while. I was just feeling the urge.
Yeah.
Okay. I do feel bad for Emerson and Lake because their names are in a band. And then when somebody leaves, you're in the wind. And then you're just like, you're not Emerson, Lake, and Palmer anymore. So what are Emerson and Lake doing?
Swimming at that lake.
Swimming at Emerson Lake.
Well, we know you talked about this, I think, off mic. That was it Greg Lake?
I don't know his first name, but Lake was invited to play. He had to fill in for somebody. So there was this moment where they played a show in Japan, and it was Asia in Asia. And I think it was like a live broadcast on MTV. Like, it was a big thing. MTV was pretty friendly to this band in the 80s. They got a lot of play in the early days, partly because I think they had some pretty, for the time, pretty good videos as well, which played right into the MTV thing. But so they invited Lake to play, and he said that the money was too good to turn down. But then they invited him to join the band to fill in whatever vacancy was there. But then he rested on his laurels and was like, no, the corporate thing, I don't agree with what they're doing. So I'll take the money for the one show, but then I won't prolong it because that would be selling out.
All right. We got two principal songwriters for the album, I think. And it's John Wetton and Jeffrey Downs. We talked about this. And before we get to the song itself, I do have a question for you. Do you think it's better to have a number one hit single that plays on the radio for decades or to have a number one album for like weeks and weeks that does really, really well and sells well?
So is this like a play on, is it better to burn out than to fade away?
In a way, but I mean, 30 years after you have it, say you have a hit single, but nothing else, or you have a number one album that was big, but no number one single from it.
I think you want the hit because then you get the residuals.
Right. Because I think you make more money from that hit single and it just keeps coming through. However, for the artistic integrity thing.
The honor.
The honor, right? The glory of album love. If you have a really good album, you could still be a viable touring act because you'll have those fans. And so you can always do that. But if you're a number one hit single, you'd have to join those sort of like stuck in the 80s.
The nostalgia tours and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you have a higher chance of getting involved in substance abuse if you just have the one hit single.
Yeah, I think so too.
But if it's an album, I think you're going to be annoyed that you're not making more money, but I think you last longer.
And there were a lot of concerts on YouTube of them in the like the 2000, late 2000 aughts, whatever you call that, in the early 2000. I think John Wetton died in 2016.
Yeah.
So, but
the full band when they, got back together.
Yeah, when they reunited and then they play shows. So there was enough of a legacy there.
Oh, yeah. And they're only really like a 3-album band in terms of their time. But from what I can gather, it's really one. This first album, and it's good, and it's sold like crazy.
Yeah.
But then the next two decreased pretty steadily, and I think the band kind of splintered apart pretty quickly. But on to happier times here, when this song was written. So we had John Wetton coming to the band already with a lot of stuff written because he was working on this stuff when he was in one of those other previous supergroups, and he had written a lot of material, so he had the chorus already, but he didn't have verses, and apparently it was more like a country song.
Yeah, it was a 6/8 time, which I don't know what that means, but it means something.
It does, yeah.
Salisbury Hill is a 6/8 song.
Okay.
At another time, think about that song and just tap it out. It resets every 6 beats.
Oh, don't you worry. We're going to be trying to figure out time signatures today.
I do not understand
time signatures. Okay. So, unfortunately, the listener can't see the look on Frank's face right now.
Understand any of that.
All right, so it moves
makes zero sense to me.
I think something like 4/4 time is like you can count 4 beats. It was.
Yeah, you can.
1 beat.
4 the beats, heat, 4 times.
It was.
It's 16.
Beat, the heat, 2 of the, 3, and moment, 4. It was the heat of, oh, I don't know if that works. I mean, that means that third beat. Man, it really would have been good if Ashley could have helped me with this beat stuff. But it's 4/4.
She was busy singing Steely Dan to you.
Which was in 11:19.3 or whatever. Okay, so in comes Jeff Downs, comes in with the verses. And his verses are in, Frank, do you know this, Kitch? 6/4 time.
Oh.
I'm going to try my best to try to get 6/4s here. Ready? So I think 4 is just kind of like regular beats, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Should like I count out like 1, 2, 3?
Well, I think
four.
It's like 1, 2, 3, 4.
1, 2, 3.
Okay. That's 4.
Oh.
Yeah, that's 4/4, right?
So you want 6.
Okay, so I never meant to be so bad to you. You count 6 in there. I never. 1. Meant 2. 2. To be. 3. Bad. 4. 2. 5. You 6.
What if we do this? I never meant to be so bad to you.
How many?
That doesn't work. Wait, are we just
clapping now?
Yeah, the U is 6 beats.
Okay.
So I never meant to be so bad to you.
There's your 6.
It's 6.
Okay. And then each
where's
of them
the 4
are 6?
Come from?
Because it's over 4.
Over 4 what?
Well, because it's going at a certain pace. Because if it was over 3.
So the 4 is just means
no,
nothing.
No, it means that the quarter note is 1 beat. So whatever the lower number is, that is the beat. So if it's 6/4, it means there's 6
beats.
And the beat is a quarter note. If it was 6/8, it would be 6 beats, but the beat would be faster because it would be an 1/8 note, which is quicker.
Yeah. And they're always going to be...
How do we split notes?
I know, it's...
How do notes make time?
Because you can go 4, it's 8, 16, but you're not going like 3, 7. So you just need to know, Frank, 4, 8, 16. Or from prog rock, they do 32 and 64ths. They don't. It's just a joke. But Steely Dan does.
I'm going to wait outside until you guys finish off this episode.
Okay. So we'll come back to I got more to say about these verses. But John Wetton wrote all the lyrics after they kind of had the verses together. So once Downs brought the verses in, it shifted from country to corporate,
yeah.
I guess.
Although, I would love to hear that demo.
How this would sound
as a country song.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And he said it would have been a really good country song.
Yeah.
But it's hard to trust rock stars when they say these things. There is some talk that this sounds a lot like Video Killed the Radio Star. Like the verses sound the same. It's not the same words or anything, but if you listen to Video Killed the Radio Star, the first verse, and you hear the first verse of this, if that Steve Howe guitar lick's not in there,
yeah,
it's very similar.
I also got Jesse's Girl feels from it.
Especially with that guitar, right?
Yes.
When's Jesse's Girl? When's that come out?
Jesse's Girl is a person, so it's not a when. It's a who.
Who year did it come out? I think it's later.
It is, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so this could be the original.
Yeah.
This is Jesse's parents.
Yes.
It could be. I'll just read you this quote from Downs. It says, he now admits that his own segment was similar in meter to the Buggles' Video Killed the Radio Star. That's frequently been pointed out to me, he explained, but plagiarizing yourself is okay. It wasn't until we got into the studio that we thought of adding the power chord intro that makes the song so distinctive, which is true. And apparently Steve Howe did not want to play it.
Yeah, he had to be convinced to do that because it's completely outside of the prog rock that he would have done. It's corporate rock here. But that power chord, that opening, just bam, 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 bam. So good.
It is so good.
Yeah, and grounds it in its time. It's just like, this song has a sound to me that makes it perfect for what I think this podcast is about. It's so early 80s, and it's right in that wheelhouse of like Journey and the Moody Blues and those kind of bands. It's just such a great sound.
It's great because I'm glad that you understand what the podcast is about, because I'm still struggling to figure that out. I treat every single episode like it's jazz, in the sense that I don't know what's going on ever.
As long as we're heading in a direction, we don't have to know where we're going. We just have to keep going there.
The direction tends to be a cliff most of the time.
Yeah, we tend to push you over it. Yeah. That is true. Okay, let's jump into the song.
All right.
Frank, are you familiar with the term iambic pentameter?
You know that I'm not.
I know. This song has verses that are in perfect iambic pentameter. So when I go through this, you're going to see that it works. So I know, Kitch, you actually probably teach this more than I do, since I now teach math. So
that'd be a tough math lesson.
The hard stress is on the second syllable.
That's right.
Right. So I'm going to pass over my stress notation on the first verse, if you want to read it out for me.
I never meant to be so bad to you. One thing I said that I would never do. A look from you and I would fall from grace, and that would wipe the smile right from my face.
It's amazing. It's perfect iambic pentameter. I haven't seen this since I taught like Shakespeare.
It's right out of the mouth of the bard.
It is. So if we have any criticisms about the lyrics, we need to keep in mind that they have forced themselves into iambic pentameter, so they have to have so many syllables, and they can't have more or less. So when it gets awkward...
Because of the 4-6 time.
Yeah. Or 6-4.
Same thing.
25 or 6-4. Hey, see that?
No.
Hey,
uh-huh.
Nice. I have that written in my notes. I want that to sound as natural as possible.
Good job.
Thank you. So he's saying that he never meant to be so bad to you, and he claims that his is the first ever song about apologizing.
That opens with an apology.
Well, I was thinking there's a lot of songs that have apologies, and I'm pretty sure Hard to Say I'm Sorry came out before this or in the same year. I always thought of Chicago as a hard rock group.
Oh, but yeah, I was absolutely always a softie. Did that come out this year? Because
I'm pretty sure it came out in 82.
Yeah.
But I know that these guys are supposed to be heavier.
Well, how did Hard to Say I'm Sorry start off?
Like, have you ever started an apology this way, Frank? Even lovers need a holiday?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I don't think that's the first line, but it was at least the second.
But they were saying that they were the first rock band, right?
Yeah, right.
So I think maybe that's their distinction.
Right.
Did they say the first rock band? I thought they said this is the first song in the history of songs that opened with an apology.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. We're going to try to give them the benefit of the doubt and say it was a rock song. I do want to figure out if the apology holds through verses 2 and 3. And I'm not sure it does. And I got some questions.
Gets a little sour at the end.
It does. Like.
Yeah.
It does. So we got to work through it. And there's some theories we can put in to try to help out John Wetton.
And me. Because I have no idea what the song's about.
Okay. Sorry. All right. I never meant to be so bad to you. One thing I said that I would never do, I guess, is to be so bad to you. A look from you and I would fall from grace, and that would wipe the smile right from my face.
I never meant to be so bad to you. One thing I said that I would never do. A look from you and I would fall from grace. And that would wipe the smile right from my face.
Now, fall from grace, that could be Adam and Eve sinning, or Lucifer falling down from heaven when he tried to be king of the universe.
I think it's a little less
biblical,
mystical than that.
Okay.
I think it's just he's being a jerk, and then she gives him a look, and he's like, oh, I've messed up.
Right.
Because he thinks he's all high and mighty at this point.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but I think you're right.
Hard for you to say that you're sorry.
It is. I just want you to know.
Yeah.
That it's hard for me to say I'm sorry.
Okay. You know, even podcasters need a holiday. Okay. I heard them say from each other.
I'm your body. Okay. Verse 2. Do you remember when we used to dance and incidents arose from circumstance? One thing led to another. We were young and we would scream together songs on songs.
There's a fall from grace going on here, that they have spent some time alone together and crossed a line that cannot be uncrossed.
Right.
That is the songs unsung.
Right.
They were making some sounds.
I thought they were robbing banks, but yeah. It is a strange verse here because it feels like they're forcing words in there to me somehow, where incidents arose from circumstance. Like, okay, that rhymes with dance well, but I'm like, okay, incidents, one thing led to another. So this sounds like, okay, maybe they had a baby.
The incidents arising from circumstance reminds me of a million essays that I've marked where kids have clearly not read the book. And it's
right.
Like, you know, Hamlet goes in and then, you know, circumstances occur.
Such that...
Yeah.
And screaming together songs unsung is a strange phrase that's an enigma wrapped in a fist.
There's a note in Genius Lyrics. It says, because they were young, something would happen and their tempers would flare.
Oh.
And that would lead them to get into fights, leading to them screaming songs unsung.
I feel like that's so odd to me because they used to dance, but did they get into a fight during their dance?
Because of the circumstance.
And the instances.
The instances arose from circumstance. One thing led to another, and we were young. So when you're young, you're hot-blooded. A Foreigner talked about that.
So we could go down the anger path or the love path.
Yeah.
One thing led to another, though?
That certainly feels like it's one of those regrettable moves.
I think that talks to the first verse.
Okay.
About he would never meant to be so bad to her.
Right, right.
And John Wetton talked about this, that it was written in the perspective of his girlfriend at the time, who became his wife and then later became his ex-wife, saying that it was basically an apology to her because he didn't treat her so right. well all the time.
Right. And he talked about how he'd sometimes try to blend in others as well
yes,
in there.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense, though. What you're saying, those verses do connect. Okay. Because, what's the chorus say? It was the...
It was the heat of the moment.
Telling what my heart meant. Ooh. The heat of the moment showed in your eyes.
It was the heat of the moment, telling me what my heart meant. The heat of the moment showed in your eyes.
So the moment tells him what his heart meant. So I feel like the one thing led to another might be a little more sexy.
Okay, that's your take. My take's a little different on it.
Kitch, could you weigh in? Because we're not getting along right now, and I don't want to talk to Frank anymore.
I hear heat of the moment. I see lines like one thing led to another, which is a classic euphemism for things accelerating in the sexy universe.
I don't necessarily disagree with that, but if we're reading it in the context of the first verse, it's about treating someone incorrectly or wrong.
Yeah, no, I do see that too. Frank, your interpretation, when you throw the third one in, it gives the sense that she's moved on. And then so maybe it is a fight now that I think about it.
Point, Frank. I'll give that to you.
So I'm winning right now is what we're saying.
Sure.
You're winning.
For the time being. All right, let's go to verse 3. Let's see what Bill can bring back here. And now you find yourself in 82. The disco hotspots hold no charm for you. I love that they're referencing 82. And someone said they're, you know, making a point of that. They're still relevant. These 30-year-olds
right.
were big when they're in their 20s.
Yeah.
You can concern yourself with bigger things. You catch a pearl and ride the dragon's wings.
And now you find yourself in 82. The disco hotspots hold no charm for you.
You can't concern yourself with bigger things. You catch a pull and ride the dragon's wings. 'Cause it's a heat.
So, this does not feel like an apology anymore. Like, this feels like a big shift to me.
Yeah, it feels like, well, I mean, I guess they did get divorced, but that wouldn't have happened at this
no,
time.
They're not even married yet, point. Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah. But, yeah, it takes a sour turn. It's almost like now he's got the sour grapes because she's made some choices about moving on or whatever.
It sounds like at this point it's more of a cautionary tale because he treated her poorly, but now it sounds as though she's moved on to other things. So he's going in one direction, she's gone in another, right? So yeah. She's no longer going out to the clubs.
And then that goes back to verse 2 when they used to dance
exactly
at the discotheques.
Yeah. Maybe she's a little bit more grown up at this point.
But she's trying to catch a pearl and ride the dragon's wings. Like, those are really big things.
Well, that was a reference to the album.
Oh, okay.
So one of the things was that this song was the last song that they wrote. So apparently they had the album pretty much done. And then at the last minute, they said, no, we need to throw this down.
We need one more song. Yeah.
We need one more song.
So they had the cover art already?
I think they had the cover art because I read that if you look at the album, there's a dragon is chasing a pearl.
Oh,
wow. So it's self-referencing. So there's a couple things. I'm not exactly sure where the apology is going, like you said. But then there's also where you just do this self-referential thing where you're talking about your album cover.
Right, right.
So it just seems like an abandonment of the song at this point, just for some, I don't even know what it is.
The one annotation again that I read here was, you catch a pearl is referring to pearls of wisdom. What that means, I'm not entirely certain, but ride the dragon's wings is supposed to resemble the narrator's temper.
Okay.
Because dragons, they breathe fire, which is hot.
Oh, yeah.
So it's heat.
Yes.
Heat of the moment.
Well, what can one say to that explanation?
Exactly. Yeah, that's pretty solid.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm going to grant you a point, but I'll grant you a... That's a
participation ribbon.
I'm giving you a pin right now. That's great. Yeah, the chorus goes into present tense, right?
Yeah.
Says it's the heat of the moment because it's the heat of the moment.
Because the dragon.
In present. So the dragon's in present, not before. It was like looking back and now. It's 82.
Yeah, because now you find yourself in 82, right. Which was current.
It's the heat of the moment. Okay. All right.
Because it's the heat of the moment. The heat of the moment.
I mean, he said somewhere that this whole song was an apology. That's what throws me off. But maybe he only wanted us to listen to verse 1.
Yeah.
I don't know. But we got that instrumental interlude that comes up after this chorus that is desperately wanting to prog out.
Yes.
And the reins are just being totally pulled back on
this. Completely pulled back. And for a song called The Heat of the Moment, we should have something, a crescendo, a musical buildup at the end of this. It feels like it's building towards something.
Yeah.
Right.
And for whatever reason, they put the guitar solo at the end, but it feels like this is where it was going, and then it never paid off.
Yeah, there's no guitar solo, and like, where's the noodling? This is prog rock. This is a 4-minute part of the song.
Yeah.
And you feel that at the end of that musical interlude, if it went the way that I believe corporate rock should go, that's where you have your key change, because it builds, it builds, it builds, and then boom, you shift gears.
Right, right.
You're into that different key, which is a 6-7 key.
I love that you think keys and time signatures are the same thing.
Wait, they're not?
No, they're not.
Do I not understand music?
We're going to need to bring on some people here. I think we're going to have a special, like, Bill and Frank go back to school episode. Very special episode. Here's the drummer Carl Palmer's comments. I'm still amazed that the song never actually gathers momentum. It stops and starts and stops and starts, but it really connected with people. And I wish those two guys could have written another song like it.
Yeah.
But I love that he calls it out. It's like, there's no momentum. And so I remember listening to this thinking, well, where's the chorus that I want? Or where's the part that I want? So it's moving and then it never takes off.
Yeah.
It feels like just like one of those early Wright Brothers planes.
Oh, just at Kitty Hawk, it just goes for about 14 seconds.
Yeah. And so it's like, what's going on?
Crashes into the ground.
We were talking about this earlier, but maybe the prog rockness of it all, they were trying to avoid certain stereotypes about songs or something like that.
Yeah.
Because you get that power chord at the beginning, which you think a band would exploit, but they only do it twice and then the lyrics pop in.
Yeah.
Right.
So there's only about 12 seconds of music before the singing begins. And then this happens, the bridge or the interlude or whatever, and then that never really goes anywhere. And then the video version cuts off the end of the the guitar solo.
Yeah, exactly. Where they go toward at the end of the song, right? Are you talking? Yeah,
yeah.
Where it just keeps playing.
That's crazy to me because that is probably the best part.
Yeah,
it's good. Is where Steve Howe's finally given her.
Well, he gives it at the front end too with the power chords.
He gives that one chord at the beginning. Is it a chord?
Well, it's like that, three chords, right? It's a series of power chords.
Right, right. Okay, sure.
Who knows music now, Bill?
I don't know, but it certainly wasn't in 9/8 time, was it? After the re-chorus. Oh, the re-chorus here. I have something here with a star. They come back to this. Oh, wait, we got to talk about verse 4.
Verse 4.
Oh, sorry. And when your looks are gone and you're alone, how many nights you sit beside the phone? What were the things you wanted for yourself? Teenage ambitions you remember well.
And when your looks are gone and you're alone, how many nights you sit beside the phone? What were the things you wanted for yourself? Teenage ambitions you remember well. It was the heat.
And my question is he talking about her? Or is he actually talking about himself? And I think it's him.
Yeah.
I think it could be.
For this to be an apology, it has to be him.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's cold. It's mean-spirited.
Yeah.
Right.
Kind of a jerk thing to do.
Yeah.
It has to be him. And I'm wondering if verse 3 could have been that too, because when he played it in 83, well, of course, he'd have to say this. He'd say, you find yourself in 83. The disco hotspots hold no charm for me. For obvious reasons. In 84, he said, for your. And it was like, oh, man. By 5, I think he just quit. I'm on a roll here.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah.
6?
Sorry.
Mix.
Licks? Licks?
Licks.
Maybe. Mix. Licks. Fix.
Well, I'm sure we can come up with a song there somewhere.
Yeah. Give me a day and I'm going to come back and re-record this part.
Perfect.
So verse 4 has got to be about himself, because if not, this is horrible. How many nights you sit beside the phone and then asking those questions, what were the things you wanted? And the idea of a misspent youth, teenage ambitions and all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, and the hot-blooded teenagers too, or youths.
This fits a band that's in their 30s now, right?
Yeah.
They're looking back.
Yeah. They have a bit of perspective.
So there's the rock band advice type of songs, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Usually I hate that, but I like it here. I really do.
In verse 4, you can really hear Jeff Down's keyboards in it. There's some huge Buggles feel, but also there is massive amounts of cowbell in the 4th verse.
Oh, okay.
Nice. Yeah, I read something where Jeff Down set a record, or tried to, in one of their later concerts where he had 100 keyboards stacked.
Oh, really?
Ridiculous.
And so, which is like so prog rock.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. You just have to add that complexity to it.
The Neil Peart of keyboards.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we go to the chorus there. It was the heat of the moment, telling me what your heart meant, which I found like a fascinating line. Like, what does that mean? Tell me what your heart meant. Because it shifts. Each time it was, first one was, tell me what my heart meant. And then the other one was, didn't have anything about that. And then this one is now, telling me what your heart meant.
Maybe it was her reaction in the heat of the moment. He said something and her reaction is what divulged what she was really feeling.
Right. Or he's thinking back on it now.
Yeah.
What her heart
he's looking back and just like, I've made a huge mistake.
Now, I've said that before. Have you said that before, Frank?
I think I say it daily.
Dave, have you ever said that before?
I don't know how a guy gets through life without saying
it. It was the heat of the moment.
You know what I really love too is the drum fill that comes after this. I feel like Carl Palmer is like, that's it. I got to play the drums.
Yeah.
And he gives something where it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. This is not the drumming we're expecting from this song.
Mm-hmm.
There's little things in there. There's hints that there's a song out there. I'd love to know if there's a version of the song that the producer couldn't keep his hands on that got out there. It's like, oh, there it is. The 18-minute version of this song.
Yeah.
And I know that they did all they could to trim the fat off the prog rock noodling. But I do want a bit more. Like, I feel this could have been a minute longer.
The drums are really restrained.
Yeah,
during the verses, there's not a lot of drums until the very end.
Yeah,
boom, 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 boom. They come in at the end. So for a drummer of his caliber, I'm sure he probably wants more.
Oh yeah, It must be crazy to be coming from these prog rock bands where you just spent all this time showing off, and now you just are there.
Yeah.
It's the 80s, man.
I heard some other Asia songs while I was listening to this that are more kind of like paired, the guitars and the keyboards.
Yeah.
There's more of like a interplay and way more complexity than this song. Maybe it says something that this is their popular one for the band.
Yeah, this is what the 80s wanted, right? Yeah. It really was.
And this is absolutely, yes.
It does work. Even though it has no momentum and all these other things, there is elements of it that it's just so likable. That guitar solo by Steve Howe at the end is so fun.
Yeah.
And just words like heat of the moment is something that you'll remember and you can think of that. Just like, you know, you began our podcast talking about that. It's like, oh yeah, I've been in that heat of the moment. So it has all these connections. The album itself is really good.
Yeah.
For what it is. I got to try to say it that way just in case someone out there is saying, but Steely Dan's Asia. Now that's real music. Peg was a great song.
But Asia's Asia is a great album
too. Yeah, yes, that's right. The one with the S, not the J.
Yeah.
Yes.
9 weeks at number one.
This is crazy.
Yeah. The album.
So it beat out all these other like major albums that year.
Yeah. There were a litany of bands kind of at the height of their powers.
Right. The
Police. It was Heart, Fleetwood Mac.
It was
the Professor of Rock.
Yeah.
And he listed all these acts. I think like Kansas, like I can't remember. My mind goes blank now. But yeah, it was a long list of bands and they got the spot.
So way to go, Asia. What did you think about the video?
It made sense in the sense that it came from 1982.
It's the two guys from 10cc, right?
Yeah.
What's their names again?
The video was directed by the team of Godley and Cream.
Cream.
Right. That's right. That's the name. And they're from 10cc, who we've talked about in the 10cc episode. And also your favorite, Neil Sedaka's Laughter in the Rain.
That's right. Yeah. I did like that song.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, good. It was a good song.
It is a good song.
It seems like it's at the height of the technical powers of the 80s for them to pull this off. Because I remember watching a pop-up video of Thompson Twins. And in the shot, there's one shot where it was like a screen. And then there was like three windows that popped up in the screen, kind of picture in picture, cascading from top left to bottom right.
Oh, okay.
And they said that was the budget. Like that shot was like 50% of the budget was just to get that. So all these squares, is it like 16? Like 4 by 4 grid? It must have maxed it out. But Kate was watching it today, and she's like, oh, it's kind of like ahead of its time, because she said it looked like almost like Instagram windows or something kind of the icons or tiles of modern. But it's also really cheesy, and it reminds me of a lot of those cheap YouTube videos where people make, whether it's like a documentary or whatever, but they don't have any source footage. So when they say a noun, they just put like a picture. It's he walked out the door, and then it's just a picture of a door.
Yeah.
Because there's like... When he talks about time, it was the heat of the moment. You get these cascades of like watches or hourglasses. And then the heat, it's like the flowers are on fire. It's all these very literal nouns it's going on.
Because in the second verse, it is funny you say that. The second line, an incident arose from circumstance. And at that point, you see a bouquet of roses that went across the screen.
Oh, a rose.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. It's so lame.
I love the exploding symbol, though.
Yeah.
I don't know what they did. Because, I mean, it's the 80s, right? So they must have had all the lighter fluid on there. Like, all right, you're going to hit it and then just get away from that.
Run away. Yeah. The other one that I love is, and that would wipe the smile right from my face.
Oh, it's like awful.
Pantomiming, like he's smiling and then wipes his face and then he's frowning at the end of that. It's like
so weird.
So awesome.
But I saw some other videos by Golly and Cream that are like, they're quite good. I think they did the Buggles video and that looked super fun.
Yeah.
Video killed the radio star.
Yeah. Yeah, it looked pretty good. I know they did the other Asia video that I didn't see.
They were prolific. They did tons of videos. Yeah.
They must have made good money. Well, actually, no, I've been reading about the way videos worked. They would charge the band half the price of the video. So if you made like a super expensive video, you had to pay half of that anyways. So it might seem like a good idea to have these like really cool videos, but they would cost the band like a ton of money. And you're already steeped in so much debt from the record company that you're just trying to crawl out.
Right.
That you don't really make money until 20 years after the album. It's a good thing our budget's so low here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's why we don't have video.
That's right. We haven't done it yet. It's also because we're not sure what we want to look like yet. And
exactly.
We can't afford the surgery. Yeah, I know we both want to look like Liberace, but I don't know. And it's just...
Well, I want to do the face-off surgery where I get your face and you get mine. So.
That's right.
I think that'd be pretty fun.
Bill and Frank go to the movies. Is there a song in that movie that you could do? Tie it all in.
I've always wanted to know what it would be like to live life as an attractive man. This is when you guys are supposed to... No, Frank.
No, Frank. It's not Frank, that good.
Bite your tongue, Frank.
All right, yeah. So the video, I guess, is a big deal. They did really well with it. It's a strange thing, MTV at that time. They just needed something that was eye candy. And it is an eye candy video. You don't really need to pay attention to it. If it's on the TV in the background, then that would be something really cool to see.
And it's all just really short clips of things. There's always something new to it. So you don't have to pay attention to a story or narrative or anything like that.
Yeah. Okay, I have a question for you. Category time. I don't know if they can do this anymore. Would supergroups even matter anymore because of the immediacy of music that, in a sense, yes, still is a band that's new because everything's remastered. It sounds really good.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can always go back to it. So the idea of a supergroup, I was going to ask for a supergroup, but I was just thinking about what we talked about beforehand. Before we turned on these mics, we talked about Velvet Revolver, and there's another band with Chris Cornell. What was that band? Audioslave?
Audioslave.
Those two are supposed to be these like major bands, and they were not really good to me. I didn't like anything I heard from them.
Well, it's both bands starting after the original bands have kind of worked through their prime.
Right.
So you think maybe the best music's already behind them.
Right.
So it's cool for the confluence of the sounds and stuff like that, that the bands might bring. But I think it has been happening, but in like pop music, it's more freelance style where it's like this person featuring. So there's tons of featuring going on, but nobody's committing to being in a band for long periods.
Just going back to the corporate rock comment, because Audioslave and Velvet Revolver, I think, would be examples of corporate rock, because Audioslave was Soundgarden and Rage Against the Machine, right? Against the Machine was a very subversive, very anti-corporate band in the early mid-90s. But now they're doing stuff from Audioslave, which seemed really manufactured comparatively to their albums. And same thing with Velvet Revolver, with Stone Temple Pilots. And who else was that? I think Slash was in there.
Oh, yeah.
Who else was?
I think it was wasn't it just all Guns N' Roses with the guy from Stone Temple Pilots?
Yeah, with Scott Weiland. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not my jam.
Yeah. Even that was the same thing. You have Stone Temple Pilots that had this early 90s alternative street cred.
Right.
And then they come together with Guns N' Roses and make something that's manufactured or feels very manufactured.
But in the age of streaming, can this even happen anymore?
No.
Like, do bands have that initial cred? Like, if bands got together now, I can't even comprehend what bands would get together that would be massive. Unless it was like a Taylor Swift or something like that. But other than that, like, and the rock is kind of a dead thing.
Remember when Jay-Z and Kanye came out with Watch the Throne?
Oh,
that
was
big to me. I got that from the library. So that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
On CD.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I don't have any clue what's going on anymore.
No, neither do I.
Bill all hasn't right. been to the library in years.
No.
He doesn't know what's going on anymore.
Yeah. There's this robot that moves around. Polly's robots in the library.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's awesome.
Hallmark movie. Do you have one for this?
I'm coming up with it. So as I'm speaking right now, the thoughts are coming into my head. It revolves around a firefighter.
Okay, that's good.
In a small town.
Right.
So there's big city businesswoman moves back to the small town to take care of her ailing mother's farm. Father unfortunately already passed away.
Yeah. The farm is ailing badly.
Yeah. She just wants to get back to Manhattan and do her big business things,
yeah.
whatever those may be.
Yeah.
Hallmark doesn't need to be specific on that necessarily. But she meets the firefighter who's one of those smoke jumpers. So he fights like forest fires and stuff right. like that. But it's forest fire season.
Right.
So she comes back trying to take care of her ailing mother's affairs, falls in love with the firefighter. He says something in the heat of the moment. She runs away inadvertently into a forest fire and he has to come save her.
Mm. No, it's got to be that they dated as youngsters and then he was going into fire and she's like, I'm not going to watch my loved one die in a fire because his father died in a fire.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And then she comes back. Oh, and
there we go.
And the way he gets back into her life is he jumps in to save her farm.
Oh.
And then that reconnects them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And the fire truck is called The Heat of the Moment. It's written on the side.
Oh, yes, please. That's great.
I actually think we have a Hallmark.
I think we do.
We got something here. Hallmark, reach out to us. And if we see a movie that's anything like this, you're getting sued.
We have lawyer friends.
All right. Did anyone bring a mixtape to the proceedings?
I sure did.
All right.
Oh, we do mixtapes here?
I did. And then I forgot my phone tonight. So this entire podcast for me is off the cuff.
And we got a cue card here, which I love seeing.
And Frank gave me a cue card. So before I could forget, I wrote them all down. And these songs are all songs about regret.
The cue card is actually the script that I wrote for Dave that he has not been following the entire time.
Okay, I forget this band, but I just died in your arms tonight.
Cutting Crew.
Cutting Crew. Thank you. Okay, so these are all songs about regret. And then That's Just the Way It Is.
Bruce Hornsby.
Oh, okay, that too. What's the one by Mike and the Mechanics then?
Living Years.
Living Years.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Shot through the heart, but not like to be blamed, but I feel so sad.
Okay. You're just killing it with this mixtape and not knowing who anyone is.
Yeah. This is great.
Yeah. And then Summer 69 by Frank Sinatra. I mean, Brian Adams. Salisbury Hill by Peter Gabriel. So I'm trying to get kind of leaning towards prog rock with all these two. And then this one, because it's about calling somebody from your past and we're in the 6 degrees of Frank and Bill's Guilt-Free Pleasures and me, Wildest Dreams by Moody Blues.
Yeah, good call.
Which is an episode I did. There's my list.
That's great.
Great self-promotion of your own episodes there, Dave.
The Moody Blues are coming out of the 60s, 70s as well, right? So you do have that.
Yeah.
That's nice. That dovetails nicely into my mixtape, unless that sounds like your mixtape, Frank.
We're swimming in the same waters here, in the same Emerson Lake, I think.
I think so. Let's see. I hope I don't Palmer you here. Here we go. Here's mine are bands that were prog rocky in the 70s and kind of made their way into the 80s and still kind of made it.
Oh, I like this.
So, okay. And I only have three.
All right.
Okay. So I have Turn It On Again by Genesis from the Duke album, which is a little rockier. Genesis, Turn It On, Turn It On, Turn It On Again. But you still have Mellotron going on in the background. Like Tony Banks still like, hey, man, I'm still here. I matter. And that's not fair. I mean, I could go on about this. Then I have Spirit of the Radio by Rush.
Yes.
Oh, okay, nice.
And that's like, it's not fair to say, to put them in this grouping. I love Genesis, of course, but there isn't a sense of selling out to me with Rush. Like, Spirit of the Radio actually feels like they're coming more into their own, even to me, than their 70s work, but I always love that song. And then I have Owner of a Lonely Heart by Yes, because that's like the ultimate sellout song.
Yeah.
If there ever was one.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, man. We got to do that song at some point.
I think so, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, back to you, Frank.
So my mixtape is similar to Dave's. His was about regrets. My mixtape is about apologies. Hard to Say I'm Sorry by Chicago.
Nice.
Please Forgive Me by Bryan Adams.
There we go. Yeah.
Always On My Mind by Willie Nelson.
Yes.
Tracy Chapman, Baby Can I Hold You.
What album is that from? Is that the first album?
From the first album.
Oh, good.
And I am ending it all off with Sorry for Party Rocking by LMFAO.
Oh, nice. I don't think they're that sorry.
I don't think so either.
I don't think they're sorry at all.
Excellent mixtape. Excellent work.
I almost ended it with On Bended Knee by Boyz II Men.
Oh, thank you for not doing that. Appreciate it.
I thought you'd hate the swerve with LMFAO a little more.
I have a soft spot there. Where, I like this band a lot.
Absolutely. Yeah. They're great. So we didn't even talk about the chart history for this song.
Right. Yeah.
Made it to number 4.
Right.
So it's no slouch of a song out there.
Yeah.
So the top 5 at the time, this is June 26, 1982, when Heat of the Moment peaked on the Billboard Top 100 charts. Counted down from 5. So already talked about Always On My Mind by Willie Nelson was number 5.
No kidding.
Yeah. Heat of the Moment by Asia, number 4. Rosanna by Toto, number 3.
Yeah.
Don't You Want Me by The Human League.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And then number 1, Ebony and Ivory by Paul McCartney and Stevie Wonder.
Wow. That song's terrible.
I know, right?
Wow.
And that went to number 1.
Yeah.
Did this go to number 1 in Canada?
It may have.
I don't think it did. I don't think it went number 1 anywhere. But you're going to look that up right now, I think. It's in the chart history.
I'm not saying it did. It's just... Yeah. Things have a tendency to go to number 1 in Canada more than the States.
No, Bill, you are correct. I was wrong. It went to number 4 in Canada, but it did go to number 1 on the U.S. mainstream rock
chart. Right. We want to thank Dave Kitchen for joining us for... Is it true? 14th?
14. Twice lucky to be here. 7 is a lucky number. 14 times. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, okay, we're talking time signatures again? This makes no sense to me.
Just a key change, Frank. Just a key change.
A key change I get. Key changes are emotional.
I want to thank our listeners for being here with us as well, too. And I have a real clever way of thanking you. You ready for this one, Frank? Page of your book.
I'm ready. I don't know if Dave is.
I'm ready.
Are you ready? Sorry, Kitch. Okay.
I'm ready.
Now, of course, if you're on one of those podcast things where you could kind of click subscribe, now's the time to do it. A subscribe from you, and we would jump to grace, and that would place a smile right on our faces.
That's not the words from the song.
Yeah, no, I changed them so they would. We're in the heat of the moment here.
Oh, so in the heat of the moment, you just decide to make me angry.
I literally just changed 3 words from the first verse.
Changed the whole meaning of the song.
I did. All right. So, listener, when your looks are gone, I hope you care about us. Because our looks are gone, and that's why we podcast, okay? And that's why you're not going to get a video from us anytime soon. All right, Frank, you give it a closer. Or, Kitch, you might as well do it, because I'm not talking to this guy.
You've been listening to Bill and Frank's Guilt-Free Pleasures.
I think we do. And at the end of the movie, when they're able to sort of link together both the life in this little town and the massive amount of money she's made in Manhattan, they go off on a boat called the Heat of the Moment. Is that Romance of the Stone? Am I thinking of a different movie? Okay. I thought we could just say whatever we wanted, but it sounds like you two actually watch Hallmark movies and I just can't add things. I kind of wanted to be under a volcano, but I don't think that happens in Hallmark.
You're thinking Joe versus the volcano again.
Yeah.
Okay, but also part of the Hallmark movie is this guy's a lieutenant or something like that in the fire hall, but the captain, played by Kevin James.